Hello, hello, guys, and welcome yet to another episode on the Stretch Street Podcast. This is the energetic EJ, one and only. I hope you're well. I hope your week has gone well. And I hope that you're looking forward to the rest of the week. If it hasn't gone well, don't worry. You know what I'd always say, right? Do not worry. There's still a couple of days more in the week. So just hang in there. Keep hope alive. And if it's been great so far, woohoo! Congratulations. Keep hope alive as well. Today I have with me on the show Christian Ray Flores. He is a former pop star turned social entrepreneur, minister, and humanitarian. After achieving stardom in post-Soviet Russia with chart-topping hits, Christian transitioned from the spotlight to a purpose-driven life, using his platform to inspire change. As the co-founder of The Third Drive, a media and venture company, it helps nonprofits, churches, and startups create meaningful impact through media and entrepreneurship. Christian is also a global speaker, faith leader, and advocate for orphans and at-risk children, especially through his work with Mercy Project. His journey from fame to faith-driven entrepreneurship offers a compelling perspective on leadership, purpose, and social change. Now, moving from, it's almost like from the north to the east, there is a lot in between, and I can't wait to unpack that whole lot with my guest today. So do not go anywhere. I'll be right back with my guest, Christian Ray Flores.
No matter how dark the night is, the sun always rises. No matter how hard life gets, keep moving forward. You never know what amazing things are waiting just around the corner. No story is too rough and no journey is too tough. Join us on Stretch Street to be inspired by the stories of people who have been through it all and come out stronger. Stretch Street Podcast. Stretching without snapping.
Okay, hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Stretch Street Podcast, Christian. How are you today?
I am very well indeed. Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Awesome. Now, you know, before we clicked on the button record, you told me you were born in an atheist family, right?
Yeah, I was.
How come the name Christian?
Born and bred. That actually came later, actually.
Tell us the story.
Yeah. So I was, it was very, very confusing because I was born in an atheist. Both my mom and dad were Marxist communists. My mom is Russian. My dad is Chilean. I was born in Moscow. They met there. So they're very ideologically aligned at the time. I think they've now sort of relaxed their views a little bit. But my whole life, I was surrounded by people who were atheists, and until I was maybe in my early 20s, mid-20s actually. But the name Christian actually came later because as I started doing music, my international background became a branding. There was a branding problem because my given name is Ruslan, that's a Russian name, Umberto, which is a Spanish name, Flores, which is a Spanish name. And people just couldn't remember the name. So I was going to be a well-known artist. I needed a brand that is a little bit easier to pronounce. So literally before I even became a Christian, I said, I like Christian. And I chose Christian Ray Flores, kept the last name, changed the first two names.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to look at that from a spiritual angle, I'm like, he called you out even before you knew it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I started and 3 years later, I was a Christian.
You spoke it into existence.
I did
literally.
Speak it into existence. I had no idea what I was doing at the time, obviously. So
God moves in mysterious way, they say.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Wow, I love it. I love it. Love it. Okay, so let's dive right into your story. You transitioned from being a pop star.
Yeah,
like that, and like that's no small thing, right?
Yeah.
And now to a faith leader and a social entrepreneur. Please share with us, what was the turning point in your life that led you to make such a profound change?
As almost always, the future is determined by the origin story.
What happened
in the beginning.
Hmm.
And for me, it was very clear later, obviously in hindsight, how this whole thing came together, although it was confusing for many of my friends, including the press, who thought I was completely crazy, right? Because I basically was, I was born in this Marxist family. We suffered greatly early on because we moved to Chile. I was 5 years old when my dad was in a concentration camp. There was a massive civil unrest. There were hundreds of thousands of people imprisoned, thousands and thousands killed, disappeared, tortured, all of that stuff, right? And we were the lucky ones because he was alive, and we ended up in a refugee facility, in United Nations-sponsored facility, for a few months before we got asylum in Germany, which is sort of a strange way to start your childhood. And what that exposes you to is sort of the fragility of freedom, I think. Hmm. And it exposes you to the cruelty of man.
Hmm.
And that was an early imprint. So a five-year-old getting those messages is sort of unusual. What happened later was sort of this kaleidoscope of moving around. So we went from, you know, originally from Russia to Chile, Chile to Germany, Germany to Russia, Russia to Mozambique, of all places, Africa, right? And if you think about it, for somebody who is 7 years old, and this is your fourth country, literally, that actually also gives an imprint. And I think, you know, one of the things that I do as I'm also a performance coach, is help people and make sense of their past lives, good and bad, to propel them forward into excellence. And the way I look at that piece of my life was, I learned how to understand people, how to learn from people, and also how to love different people, how to love diversity of cultural language, body language, customs, things like that. And the reason for that is because as a child, you are already predisposed to learning very quickly, right? But also you are forced. Like imagine going from Latin America to Germany and then from Russia, and then you land in Mozambique in 1977, right? And everything is different. Like, who are these people? I don't understand the language. And it sort of puts you in this hyper-learning mode. And it was the greatest gift to me. Because I never stopped. I learned how to learn through these sort of pre-traumatic experiences. And I spoke four languages by age 9, you know, and I've absorbed all these cultures, all these colors and things that you don't even make sense of it. It's not even rational, but it's in your bones. You know, in Africa, it's the rhythms, the music, the joy, the celebration, sort of that stuff, right? And we went back to the Soviet Union to Russia when I was 14 years old. And I was so depressed after Africa, right? Because it was like the food line, bread lines and scarcity in food. No one was hungry, but it was very basic, especially when it comes to fruit, right? So I grew up, we had a garden. I had avocados and papayas and all kinds of mangoes everywhere, right? I go to Russia, there's like nothing there. It was really depressing.
Right.
And cold also. Very, very cold. I hated it. But how it served me later is that when I went to college, I got a master's degree in economics, and all of my friends went to you know, banking or trade or whatever. And I was so musical my whole life. I sang, I danced, I was a break dancer when I was a very serious break dancer, right? When I was in my teens. I'm like, you know what, I really want to do music and whatever, you know, master's degree, I want to do music, at least try it, right? And that whole idea, that whole sort of mix of cultures really helped, because at the time, when there was a high demand for Western-sounded music in the post-Soviet space, because the wall came down and all this information flowed in from everywhere. Well, the problem was that no one could... Not many people knew how to do that kind of music, and I
did.
And I had the rhythms, and I had the musicality that was not typical, you know, in that place. So I started doing pop music. I mean, obviously, there's talent, there's hard work, there's luck involved, but really, at the core of it, it's, you know, in the entrepreneurship language, it's product market fit.
Right.
There was a demand for exotic pop. Western sounding pop, and I could do it better than anybody else.
And here you were exotic yourself.
I was exotic myself. I was mixed, you know. And it's funny when it comes to sort of social perception, right? So Russia is very, it's not a very it's not very diverse when it comes to racial diversity.
Right, right.
Moscow was not. So I'm this brown-skinned kid, right? So I'm more of an outsider-looking kind of person.
Yeah.
So it's a disadvantage, generally speaking, if I'm sort of in mainstream business, let's say. It's a great advantage if you're a pop star. It's because you're exotic.
You can spot him in the room.
Yeah, just, you know, so it sort of worked in my favor, actually. And anyway, so that's sort of that's the backstory. And then what happened after, I was very business oriented. Obviously, I'm an economics major, so I have an interest in that. I'm not just a pure artist. And I started producing other bands first. We had a really amazing project. There's a girl, like a Spice Girls type girl band that became legendary in all of that space for a long time. But I was really, I had this moment. I was in a train going through like a tour, right? Multi-city tour. So I usually traveled with an entourage of maybe 20 people, 21 people, something like that. Dancers, rappers, admin. I had a cook with me because I was a vegetarian. I wanted people to cook for me.
And
the choices of food were not good at the time locally in those sort of smaller towns and stuff like that. And I was just sitting on a train. I think I was alone at the time. I was looking out the window. And I remember thinking to myself, is this all there is for me? And it was a strange thought because on paper, I was living the dream.
Having the best life.
Yeah, it's the best life. Because, you know, what percentage of singers get to entertain millions of people?
Yeah.
In 15 different countries of all of that Eastern Europe block, right? I mean, maybe 1%, maybe. And I was living it. I was literally going to a tour from city to city where people could sing my songs, they knew my albums, etc. But what I realized at the moment, as I was horrified by the thought myself, going, what are you talking about? You know, you should be ashamed of yourself. Ungrateful, you know.
Ungrateful indeed.
you know, and I think that's a thing that I try to help people when I do these interviews or coach or whatever, or write articles or write books, is that, you know what, don't live somebody else's dream for you. You know, because I was living the dream of that sort of stereotypical artist. And then in that moment in the train ride, I just realized I'm just not that stereotypical artist. I'm just not that guy who will be satisfied to do just music for 40 years, right? I had traveled the world. I spoke four languages. I have an economics degree. I became a Christian sort of in the process. I was going, man, I'm entertaining a lot of people, but I'm not changing a lot of lives. I wanted to see if I can help people spiritually. I got into philanthropy. I was very interested because I saw so much poverty in sub-Saharan Africa, in Mozambique, where I was, one of the poorest countries in the world. And I had this idea, these burning ideas on how to help the poor. I also wanted to experience entrepreneurship on an international level. And I was in this sort of maybe a little bit of a silo, you know, in
right,
that space.
Right.
So I had all these urges that were more into more gut feeling, more general feeling of unease. And so on one side, you have these urges that have no promise, no guarantee of anything, right? But just desires and intuition. On the other side, you have this thing that you're one of the luckiest people on earth. Yeah, that you've got it done, right? You have it made. Why risk this?
Right.
And I think that a lot of high achievers, people even who are at the top of their game, you know, they're CEO of a company, whatever, you know, politician, athlete, artist, they get trapped by their own success. And basically what happens is it's so good and so good on paper, but it's not entirely them.
Right.
Not all of it is. That they hold on to it at the expense of their emotional health, at the expense of their dreams, at the expense of they don't want to look foolish if they try something new and fail.
And it fails.
Yeah. Because they're already successful and they're used to being perceived as successful.
So is it almost like they tie their identity to success?
Yeah. So you know how people, for example, there's this very common, I would say, negative connotation to objectifying women, right, for their physical attributes. You know, you're objectifying women, right? That's a bad thing. What we don't talk about enough is that we self-objectify. Self-objectifying is when you take one attribute of yourself and tie your identity only to that, right? So I am a CEO of a tech company that just sold for $20 million or $50 million or $100 million. And my whole identity is tied up in that guy, in that persona. That is as bad and as destructive as objectifying somebody for their physical attributes. Yeah. So it's self-objectification is what happens. And that usually coincides with workaholism. Because if that's your identity, your success in that particular dimension, it drives you to the edge of sanity. You compromise health, you compromise family, you compromise love, you compromise peace, you compromise creativity, ultimately. And what happens a lot of the times is you reach a point where all of those things, all of that damage that was created because you've self-objectified yourself catches up with you. And then you can't even do the job that you're idolizing well enough either, which is ironic, right? So for a musician, for me, I'm driving, you know, if I keep on going onto this, on this thing, I'm touring, I'm doing interviews, at endorsement deals with Adidas, with Guess, with Head & Shoulders, you know, you keep doing that and you get caught up in that. Guess what's going to stop happening? Good music.
Because you lose yourself.
It doesn't flow. It doesn't flow. Your creativity starts taking a hit and starts drying up, you know? So those are some of the dynamics that I really love to talk about, right? Because they're not obvious on the surface, because we admire people like that. We go, yeah, man, you must have it all made. But every season in life presents their own trap, essentially, you know, that you have to learn how to get out of.
Right. Wow. That is such a beautiful journey you just took us through. But just to sort of pin it and nail it is to say that, what was the exact point? Do you remember if there is an exact point? Because sometimes it's a combination of points.
Yeah,
and you just discover that, okay, we're here. But for sometimes you can literally define the defining moment. You can point it out and say, this was when I said nope, and I made a U-turn. Do you have such defining moment from the moment the thought came to you on that ride to say, is there more to life than this? To when you said, you know what? We are flipping things around.
It was pretty soon. That was the moment it was already in sort of bouncing around my head.
Like in your consciousness.
There are feelings, right? There's feelings that you go, what is this feeling? Like I feel dissatisfied or underwhelmed and all of that. And then eventually it sort of bubbles up with this one thought. And then I'm sure it sort of took a little bit of time to digest it and go, okay, what does this even mean? But eventually I basically said to my business partners, my co-producers, my staff, hey, you know, I'm going to probably phase out slowly because I want to do these other things. And of course, all of them were super upset with me because they invested their talents
into that vision.
Yeah, and they invested themselves in me, and I felt terrible for being the guy who goes, yeah, not maybe I don't want this that as much as I used to. So it broke my heart to sort of disappoint them, and rightfully so. I think they thought I was insane, right? But I happened to have a very acute sense of intuition that I trust. And sometimes it gets me in trouble because I overreact and I do it too quickly, and then it's really hard. But I'm sort of people are either risk averse or risk prone. I'm definitely more risk prone. And I think part of it is because I grew up in such unstable, uncertain environments that I'm very comfortable with discomfort, with risk, things like that. So it took me maybe 2-3 years to transition out. And I started doing ministry first, and I wanted to learn how to speak publicly. And it really helped me as a speaker now to preach, you know, 2, 3, 4 Sundays for 20 years.
I'm going to have to pause you there. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, because I'm pausing you there because this is such a beautiful learning moment. You just mentioned now you've been a pop star.
Yeah.
Like somebody recognized globally, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the moment you switched, you could have maybe ride on your past glory and just dive right in into the next phase. Yeah, but here you just said you had to take a public speaking course. Like you had to train yourself to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though you've been familiar with the microphone. Tell us about that.
Well, it's the big transition. As a matter of fact, speaking publicly was way more terrifying than performing because...
You don't say.
Yeah, way more terrifying because when I perform, the public is already pre-bought, right? They're fans. They bought tickets because they love my music. They sing my music. You know, so it's just such an easier environment. And then when you speak, first of all, you have to convince people that what you are telling them is worth paying attention to. Mm. Also, I think the burden of responsibility is much higher when you're trying to lead people spiritually versus just entertaining, right?
Right.
Hey,
right.
I do a concert. We jump around. We have so much fun, and then we're done. You know, I'm not trying to change anybody's life. I'm just trying to make them happier, you know, for like an hour and a half.
For a moment.
Yeah. You know. So when you speak publicly, especially if you're a spiritual leader, you're literally changing eternity for somebody potentially. Right. That's a huge deal. It's a big responsibility. So I was mentored by my mentor, and I'm like, I don't know how to do this. You have to teach me how to do this. And he goes, well, you're on stage all the time. I said, it's not the same thing. Okay. So I was terrified. But through mentorship and practice, it became sort of second nature. And I'm so grateful for the years and years of doing that because there's two things that happen. One is you learn the nuances of human nature to such depth that is impossible to replicate in any certification, any degree of, you know, coaching degree or anything like that. You deal with the most nuances, the deepest sort of corners of human experience, and you do it for 25, 27 years. And then the second thing is just you just speak all the time. Right? Mm. All the time you speak. Like if you do anything all the time, you're probably going to get pretty good at it eventually, you know?
Right.
So that really, I'm so grateful for those years because now that I speak in sort of broader environments and podcasts and it's not really religious all the time at all, the ability to discern, to communicate, to convince, to inspire, to even question things well, is so much more developed. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't be able to do it the way I do it now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm very grateful for the experience and the learning that came from that, from those years. Yeah.
I love
it. It also informs me as everything, as a marketer, for example. If you learn how to communicate, if your feedback is instant when you're looking at the faces of the people you're speaking to, week after week after week after week, you learn certain things almost on a very intuitive, deep level as muscle memory that translates directly into creating a website, creating branding strategy, scripting a video and shooting a video, directing a video, or shooting a film, a documentary, a music video, things like that, writing a book. All of that communication muscle, I guess, right?
Comes together and it can be
used very effectively in a whole range of mediums of communication. It's all communication,
right?
And
just
I believe
different flavors.
Yeah, and I think the highest value skill you can have, the second highest value skill you can have, and also the second highest paid skill you can have is the skill of communication. The first one is innovation. It's right. Basically when you create something that doesn't exist yet. Those are the highest valued, highest impact, and highest paid capabilities and skills.
And the second
one, I think, is communication. Awesome. The third one is leading people, is leadership.
Leadership.
Management.
I love it. Innovation, yeah. Communication, leadership. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. Okay, so my brain is going poop, 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 poop with all these questions. So I am going to ask from a perspective of somebody who is faith-based.
Okay.
Case in point, a Christian, for example. Because I know of young people who have this conflicting interest in them. Now, from your story, correct me if I'm wrong and just maybe, you know, set me in tone, is to say that even when, you know, you were still the pop star and transitioning into this different other expression of you, you became a Christian in between.
Yes.
So were you still performing as a Christian?
Yeah, I was.
Good. Right. So now speak to somebody or a young person, they could even be old because we still have the boomers, right, who are latching onto purpose later on in life, to say where the conflict is when it comes to, I am this person who really wants to be known for their faith.
Mm-hmm.
I want to maintain my faith. I don't want to be ashamed about it. But yeah. I also know that I can do beyond this. Like, for example, you chose to say, I want to affect life as a faith-based person, meaning I want to preach, I want to speak the word, I want to, you know, share the word with people. But at the same time, I know I have this other expression. I'm an economist, right? And I want to do business as well. How did you deal with that conflict where you're not to the extreme to say, oh, how would they feel? How would I feel? How can I combine being a pastor, for example, or a minister, and then doing business? You know, how do I merge all of that together? What would you say to that person?
That's a very rich question, actually. And I would say, okay, let's start with the, I think the core thing is this. I think most of us, and even the most successful people, to a degree, lean towards living somebody else's dream. Because we are, it's a primal, almost like encoding in us to fit in and to not be rejected by our tribe. So we fear rejection. And that's a healthy thing because we want to contribute to a collective that we enrich, that, you know, et cetera. So that there's a very healthy side to it. The unhealthy side of it is that that same exact fear of rejection will make us conform to somebody else's story of us. So to me, for example, it could be a combination of my story is any most artists in existence will kill for to be in the place where I was. Therefore, I should stay. No, that's somebody else's story. That's his story, her story, but it's not my story. Or my parents will freak out. They first of all freaked out because I went to college, got a master's degree, and started doing music instead of banking, right? That's the most foolish thing you can possibly do. So a parent who is really, you know, invested in the economic well-being of your child is concerned, rightfully so. But then that child defies all odds and gets the fame and the glory and the money. And then he goes, yeah, I'm bored with this now. So now you're freaking out your parents for the second time. So there's all these, and now you can multiply all kinds of scenarios, right? My girlfriend, my spouse, my parents, my tribe, my whatever, my the Joneses,
your team.
My fellow stars. For me, it was the press.
Right.
The press went crazy. Crazy. They thought there were all kinds of lies about me. He became, you know, he became part of a cult. He lost his mind. You know, they're milking him for his money. All that just craziness. And it hurts, right? It really hurts when people say that. And they're completely making this stuff up, right? So my point is this. We live somebody else's story a lot of the time. And I think developing practices and a community and coaching, that's why coaching is really important. Somebody who looks at you objectively and calls you beyond what you think you can do really helps you not live somebody else's life. You are a unique human being put on earth to do unique work. And there's seasons in life, there's turns, there's all kinds of steps but you have to trust your instinct, you have to get some guidance, a framework around you, an inner sort of fortitude, I guess, to develop yourself and perform at the highest level without losing emotional health, spiritual health, relationship, things like that. That's why I'm passionate about coaching, is that I just love helping people do that because I've done it so many times over. And with so many people as well, right? So that's one thing. The other thing that I felt when you asked me this question is that what are you going to stop doing, let's say, if you become a Christian, right? So for me, I'm doing pop music. What is pop music about? It's about love, sex, and having fun. That's all it is. 99%. It's all about, it's because it's produced by and produced for people who are in mating season, like your teenagers, your hormones are raging. You're trying to figure out, you know, how to get the girl, how to not lose the girl. You try to cry about,
right,
about, you know, losing the girl, you know, all of that stuff. You know, Taylor Swift is all about breakups, right? I mean, she's singing to that group, you know, that, you know, if so. So that's literally what you sing about. So you have to have the maturity to go, that's great. I mean, bottom line, romance is a great topic to talk about. Where's the boundary between romance and exploiting sex, for example?
Right.
To sell. Right? So I literally had to look at my repertoire, my show, and I had to cut like three songs that were pretty explicit. You know? And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I can do that anymore. So and people in my, literally, even people in my band, they were like, what is wrong with you? This is perfectly
like, what
fine.
Has happened to this man?
You're like, not fun anymore, okay? You know, so, and, you know, I had like some dancers, and I had a female dancer who did this pretty sexy dance during a song. Doing this particular song, and I'm like, yeah, I'm cutting the song. I'm sorry. I'm not doing that anymore. And she was like, what? This is like my shining. This is my solo, man. What's up? And so I have to make all these decisions.
Right.
Even from past stuff that I've done and sort of reformat. And I don't think I lost my spirit or the thing that made me special. I just had to make some adjustments. And then going forward, obviously, the music I wrote was just deeper. And it didn't have to be less fun, right? It was just deeper. It was purer, I guess, you know? So, and then there's the business responsibility also came into play in my situation, particularly because we invested a lot of time and money and energy into producing this girl band thing, right? That was like the Spice Girls of Russia. And we literally handpicked some of the soloists, pretty girls, etc. But the whole business model was about sex appeal. That's all it was. All of it was that. It was nothing else. It was just that thing. Pretty
right.
girls. Most of them can't really sing very well. Okay? But they look fantastic.
And they're right. not
they're not wearing a lot of clothes, right? So that was the business model. So to me, before I was like, this is fantastic. This is gonna be a cash
flow. It sells itself.
Yeah. And the thing is, it literally started selling, and I became a Christian as it was starting to sell. And it sold, so I observed that it sold for, it's still going. There's like five generations of girls, a bunch of solo careers that was spun out. So I walked away from millions of dollars because of my convictions and my core
Your
beliefs,
faith.
Right? Mm. Yeah, I'm like, you know, guys, it's killing me, but I don't think I can do this. So these are some of the decisions you make, you know, based on core convictions. And they will cost you money a lot of the times, right? And it cost me millions. But what it gives you is integrity, fullness, wholeness, and
peace.
And a peace in your heart and a clarity and an excitement. So I think the upside, it might not be measured in the same millions that you lost. But if you think about it, it might be measured in other millions.
eternity,
yeah,
brother.
Exactly. And spiritual, obviously spiritual benefits and stuff like that. So
wow.
So those are just some of the nuances that you struggle with. And honestly, even if you're not a faith person and you're listening to this, you will have the same exact struggles as you mature because your values will change.
Shift.
And as you develop higher values, you'll have to look at the things that you've compromised before and not compromise on those things now or in the future. So
right.
Even if you're not a sort of a faith person, the same dynamic actually happens when you learn and grow because some values come in that you didn't have before. And now what are you going to do basically? Right. So, and I think authenticity, knowing yourself well and having guidance, coaching, some peers that can speak wisdom into your life. Those are massive advantages in life that will help you navigate those complexities.
So lovely. Oh, you couldn't have answered that question better. That is so good. I hear you say it boils down to your decisions. There is a reason that you chose to make a move or make a turn or make a 360 degree change. And the decisions and choices you make after that is to buttress the reason you changed in the first place. So if there is no connection and there is no relationship between the choices you are now making based off of the decision you already made, then did you really make it? And I think that is so beautiful, coming to the core of who you are and what you truly believe. And it's just beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, because I see a lot of, you know, young people, I would say, go through that phase. And I like that you also spoke to, even if you're not a person of faith, it's something that you also experience once you're value begin to change. And this could be based off of the kind of people you start to roll with or the kind of information you start to consume. Because, for example, you see that some people make this shift when they start to dig into personal development, for example, and then they start to realize, oh, okay, this isn't serving me anymore. So, for example, in 2020, that was when I, you know, started to meet myself afresh, and I found out, you know, my sages and my saboteurs, and I realized, ooh, we can't go on like this. We can't. And I started to make those changes, and it just kind of changed the way that I saw life, and some things just didn't matter anymore, while others started to matter more, and so. Yes. For everything that I started to do from then was based off from that conviction, like knowing that there is more to me than this. And so even sometimes when you don't see it clearly now, you just hold on to the convictions that you have. Like, I believe so dearly in this. So even if it doesn't make sense to you, that's okay, because you don't see what I'm seeing. And so based off of what I'm seeing, I'm going to live through true to what I am saying about me, about my future, and about what I believe right now. And it's so powerful. Thank you for sharing that with us. So I'm just going to ask you this, as you know, we start to bring the conversation to a close. Now, you have such a rich, rich, rich experience, your life's journey. You know, you've almost been It's almost like you've been on multiple dimensions of life, right? From childhood to where you are today, what would you say are some life lessons? I think you've mentioned some of them in passing while you're sharing your story, but I feel like there are people who learn when things are called out specifically, just, you know, like point by point, this is one, this is for emphasis sake, so that it can sink in. What are some life lessons that, if these were the only things that you want to share, to say, you know what, if I share this, I hope that as I put it out into the universe, it's going to change your life, it's going to change your mindset, it's going to change your perspective. What are those lessons for you?
I would say that top of the list for me is imagine what can be and dare to pursue it, because most people never pursue what they already imagined. They just don't. And sometimes we have this mythology of high achievers, right? Where you go, yeah, you were just so talented and you're so driven, as if it's like the thing that happens with when you were born. And I don't really believe that's true. You know, These are skills that can be developed. And sometimes those skills are developed just in a coincidental way, right? So it feels like it's genetic almost.
Right.
Because life made you, shaped you, you know, life circumstances, having mentors, having opportunities and also disadvantage. So that's sort of the big thing, is that everybody has these incredible ideas. Everybody's creative. All of us have a very unique role to play. And finding that role and pursuing it, giving it your all, I think it's a responsibility. It really is. You owe it to yourself and you owe it to the world. And the truth is that 95 or more percent never do.
Right.
Or they start and give up early. They give up way, way too early. So that's probably the big thing, that I'm so grateful that I had the opportunities and to pursue things that are completely like beyond my, actually even any rational sort of, yeah, this is going to happen, right? And then they happen and you go, huh. So maybe right. I can do the same thing in this other area, and then it happens. So there's a art and a skill to achievement and high performance. I really believe that's attainable by anyone who just has the desire and the ability to invest in learning those skills. So that's the first thing. The second is, a lot of the times, the things that stop us, or almost like you carry this weight around your ankles from making that progress, are the stories of failure and trauma. And we sort of choose to interpret those things as our limitations. And what happens, and this, there's so much evidence to this, so much science behind it, and so much experience behind it. I've seen it over and over and over again, is that most of that, if not all, trauma can be repurposed as fuel. And there are techniques to do it, and you can do it. So if you look even at my example, it's a fairly extreme. So most people, especially in the developed world, hopefully will never experience what I experienced.
Right.
But I was a refugee at age 5. That's literally my first childhood memory, is standing outside of a concentration camp holding my mom's hand. I didn't know if my dad is going to be alive tomorrow, you know? And then on top of that, there was like one thing after another. We lived in poverty for a while. We lived in a communal apartment for a while. It's all the way back, all the way through my younger years, all the way to teenage years. The first apartment that we came back to after the divorce of my parents, and I was brokenhearted, and we went back to these cold Russia with no mangoes, you know, and no palm trees.
And no good music.
And no good music. It's just super boring and grayscale. You know, we share this one bedroom apartment with my single mom now, who is heartbroken, my sister and I. I slept in the kitchen for years, in the kitchen, at a pullout chair, right? I had a little partition. So my point is, these are all things that can dictate our limitations. They convince us we don't belong in the dream world, in the achievement world, or in the contributing to the world around us kind of life. But the truth is, those are the exact same things that will take you there. You know? Those are the things that will fuel you. As a matter of fact, I consider those unfair disadvantages.
Advantage, yeah.
So I look at people, I live in America, I live in Austin, right? And, you know, the average sort of middle-of-the-road American man who has never seen mortal danger or hunger or poverty or civil war or tanks in the streets. And that kind of, they've always had air conditioning, right? They've always had a fairly nice house, and somebody got them a car when they were in high school.
Place.
You know, like, you know, things that we only, you know, I was growing up watching that on TV, you know, I was like
reading them in books.
Yeah, reading them in books. And I would, you know, I was in Mozambique. There was no TV. There was literally no TV stations for half of the time I was there. And we had my father build this big tower with an antenna that got TV from South Africa and Swaziland, right? And it was like bad signal. And we would watch these American shows where like teenagers in high school would drive cars. And I go, what? You know, how can teenagers have cars? I don't understand even that concept, right? And the people would go on cruises and have nice clothes and, you know, things like that. So it was like completely different. It's like almost, it could have been a different planet, basically, right? So when I look at people like that in America who are my friends, et cetera, and they travel through life with a baseline of difficulties and problems that are so much easier than what I'm used to. So I actually, you can interpret their life as an unfair advantage, right? And, you know, and that's why I don't believe in this stupid concept in America as white privilege. Just because you're white, you have all the advantages, you have this advantage. No, I don't think so at all. You're at disadvantage compared to me because you've never seen the stuff
really
that I've
experienced
done.
Things.
Yeah, so I have much more muscle, much more grit, much more ambition, and much more endurance than you do. So I need to apologize to you for having an unfair
advantage. Yeah, you didn't go through that.
You know? So
I love that. That's a great way to look at it.
I'm like, I'm so sorry, brother. I'm so sorry that you're so
that
shaken.
That you've had so much privilege.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that you're so shaken by this one bad news that you got, or an investor didn't give you money. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, so obviously I'm joking around about this. But the point is that we can be defined by our trauma in a bad way and limited, or we can be fueled by our trauma. And there's so much science behind it. And you can learn this. It's a skill, right? And it's amazing. So if you had a lot of difficulty, congratulations. You have rocket fuel in your veins that you should just learn how to use.
Wow. Oh my goodness. That was so good. Talk about flipping the power of resilience and the usefulness of it. I love it. I love it. I mean, if every, I'm just going to bring it home for myself and my brothers and sisters. Like if every African look at it this way, do you know we're going to walk with our shoulders up high?
Absolutely.
Like, oh my gosh. You haven't gone to bed without food for a day in your life? Really? Wow. Oh my gosh.
Exactly. So you have never seen, you know, people shooting at each other in the streets, or crooked politicians, or, you know, or disease and corrupt governments. You have never seen that. Oh, wow. So now that you have a slightly off balance presidential candidate, you freak out. You think the world is ending. Oh, come on now. You know, like you have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh my God, this is so good. Like, this is such a great perspective, you know, to just like, oh, okay. We're okay. We turned out great after all with everything. I love it, love it, love it. Thank you so much, Christine. I could talk with you all day long. You are so rich, and it's just a product of your experiences, just like you said. And this is the unfair advantage that you truly have, and having all these facets of experiences that culminate into this amazing human that you are today. But there's one question that keeps bugging me is, in the midst of all of this, like you said, when you moved from being the pop star and then you become a Christian and people are going all, and then you have all this media coverage coming up with things that are not true, how were you able to sustain yourself, you know, through that? And I know it's almost like a no-brainer, but maybe if you say it or you share it, there could be something you would say that would shift something for somebody. Because again, we could go with the answer you just gave right now about, you know, mm-hmm. the unfair privileges that, oh, this is why you're able to deal with it. But I just wanted to share what was going through your mind in those seasons. Because sometimes when we're going through it, it doesn't make sense. It's painful, it's hard, you're frustrated, you're angry, you're depressed sometimes. How were you able to hold your head above water with all the lies, especially when you know they are lies? You know, how did you navigate that season?
So I have two answers are popping up in my head. One is perspective and the other one is facts. And I'll tell you exactly what they are. So perspective, I'll tell you a conversation I had. I had a friend who was one of my mentors. He did sort of this premarital counseling. He wanted to start dating my wife, Deb. And so they really helped us build a relationship and build a solid foundation. So he was like my sage advisor. So I call him one time, and I'm just so upset because I just read this article about becoming a Christian and becoming part of this non-Orthodox church. Because, you know, just like in Latin America, Catholics is sort of Christian Catholic, same thing. Now it's changing dramatically. In Russia, it was Russian Orthodox or nothing. And I became a member of this evangelical church that was sort of non-denominational. So right. That was unusual. And people don't trust things that are not familiar. So that's perfectly understandable. So the article talked about how I became part of a cult and that they're using me, my fame, for their benefit. And so I call him and I'm like, man, this person never talked to me. Have no idea who I am. They've never been to any of our sort of gatherings or anything like that. And they're just writing, they're literally making stuff up about me being used by the church. And his name is Misha. He goes, and he's like, by the way, like a nuclear science PhD type guy, you know, very smart. And he goes, well, yeah, we are using you. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, we're using you for the benefit of the kingdom of God. That's what we're using you for. That's not a, why is that a problem? And I go, yeah, you're right. I don't know why that's a problem at all. I like to be used for the benefit of the kingdom of God.
I love it.
That's sort of the whole point, isn't it? Right? So, okay, I guess you're right. Yeah. So that's one thing. And then the other is really the facts, the benefits of living by ancient wisdom, right? And by things that have survived thousands of years. I realized that, okay, I come from three generations of broken homes, you know? I mean, as a matter of fact, when I became a Christian, one of the main motivators was that I wanted to build a family. And I literally knew nobody who had built a good family that I can admire. Like, not one person. And I didn't have that in my experience. I was heartbroken. I was dating this girl who became pregnant. We had a baby. And I was such a jerk to her that she walked away, cut me off from my relationship with my older daughter, Tiana. Aww. And I was depressed. I was literally had a number one hit at the moment. That was everywhere, everywhere. Every disco, every radio station, every TV station, everywhere. And I was clinically depressed because I didn't know how to build a family, right? So I meet this pastor. He tells me, I'm like, hey, can you teach me how to do this? I don't know what to do. He was like, yeah, absolutely. So I said, okay, I'm gonna learn how to do that. So it took me like 1 or 2 years to even make my brain look at women in a healthy way from a perspective that is spiritual. Because it was so distorted, right? But then all of a sudden the lights came on, right? And I go, huh, I can see it now. I didn't even know how to start. I didn't have a framework. So eventually I was mentored, I was coached. This is what romance is. This is what love is. This is what respect is. This is what purity is. This is what marriage is. These are all the depth and the dimensions of a healthy marriage and how beautiful it can be. And this is how it influences a child if they're witnessing a healthy marriage. And for me, that spoke a lot because I was the child who witnessed a divorce and cheating. And I didn't know how to get rid of that. You know, right. I was so fearful. So, and the reason I tell you the story is because these are just facts. There's a before and there's an after. You know, there's a story in the Bible where the Romans are interrogating this guy who was blind, and then Jesus gave him a sight, right? and the guy, the Romans, oh, it's not the Romans, it's the local authorities. They were like, tell me what happened. He goes, I was blind and I can see.
The Pharisees, yeah.
yeah, the Pharisees. And they're like, I was blind and I can see. And they go, yeah, but, you know, but by what authority and how did they do it and what's, how, you know, how dare he do that? And he goes, I don't know any of this. I just know that I was blind and now I can see, right? And so that's I have that story, so many of those stories, right, to illustrate my faith that is, the other day I was talking on a podcast and the guy was complete atheist and he goes, tell me how that worked for you. And I just was able to explain in ways that are not religious, they're not condemning, they're not judgy, but I can tell you one thing, I can tell you so many stories, but for 3 generations, my family has been unable to build a healthy family. 2 weeks ago, I celebrated 25 years of a healthy, happy marriage.
Woo-hoo! Praise God!
I was blind, and I can see.
And like, now you can how see.
How it works, I can try to explain, but honestly, I don't know fully. But I know that I've been married for 25 years, and I broke the curse.
Wow, so good. So good. Like, I feel so blessed right now. Thank you so much for sharing this blessing. What is the inspiration behind you then doing this? Because again, I know that was in the past, but still, you are still Christian Ray Flores. Mm-hmm. You're still the Christian Ray Flores. I mean, you could kind of still, you are known, right? Why is it important for you to still get on this platforms, small podcasts, podcast host, you know, big platform to share your story? Why is it important for you?
I just want people to hopefully be able to see that they have way more to offer to the world than they think they do. And some of the obstacles that they live through are actually untapped energy, untapped fuel. And I just wanted to share some. I love sharing the stories that illustrate the skills. So it's not just, it's really not about inspiration. It's about a clear way forward for me. For me, I want to equip people with tools that help them succeed at a very high level for a very long time. And that's basically my main motivation.
I love it. Just tell us a little bit about your coaching so that if anyone is listening and they just want to check out the work you're doing now, how can they find you? What do you do specifically when it comes to the performance coaching? And just give us an overview of how you serve the world now.
So you and I were talking about today, if you're in the audience and it really inspires you and you got, okay, this and this is really helpful. I offer all of the information, all of the knowledge and the wisdom for free, all of it. So if you go to christianrayflores.com, you'll see a free newsletter that comes every Sunday. The catalog is free up to 3 months back. So the last 3 months of posts is completely free. If you want to go beyond that, you can pay the price of a latte a month and get full access. And it's a great resource that I share very freely, right? Also, I developed this tool. It's called the Exponential Scorecard. And it's basically this free assessment that takes about 5 minutes where you can answer a few questions. Take maybe 5-6 minutes, depending on how long you take to answer the questions. And it gives you this very clear, personalized report on the dimensionality of your life, your emotional health, all the dimensions of your health. It's a great starting point to understand where am I now and what do I need to fix and work on. So you can find that at Exponential, without the E, we're starting with the X, exponential.life. That's my coaching website. So those things are absolutely free. If you are one of the few people that go, man, I'm going to get serious. I want some help, blah, blah, blah. We're sort of waitlisted. Most of the time we don't have open spots, but what people can send me a message, set up a discovery call and see if it's a fit. And then we can put you on the wait list. And eventually, every month there's one or two spots that become available for Exponential. And basically the way it works is I do sort of a combination of group one-on-one and asynchronous coaching. So it's sort of proven to become the most effective way to, at the very least, introduce people to the core skill set. And I think it's really not about me. I'm not the guru. I'm just a person who will coach you how to get the skills. And that's basically the idea. And I work with people who are very, very serious about putting a dent in the universe, who want to change the world. And they realize to change the world, you have to be very, very resilient, very focused, and move at a higher speed, function at a higher level. It's just inevitable, right? Like if you want results that most people don't have, don't do what most people do, right? So,
right.
So it is a pretty, serious thing to go through if you want to work with me. That's why the people who qualify are people who are very serious about the impact they want to have in the world, and they're coachable and teachable and ready to invest.
I love it. I love it. I hope I'm going to get all the links so that I can attach it to the show note, and so that at least for those who just need that first door to open up, that insight to, know where they are at, they can go for it. And for those who really are serious and want to make a change in the world, can explore being on that wait list to get to work with you. What will be your final words as we wrap this up for anyone listening? And like you were asking me at the beginning of the show, who are the audience? I'd say it's a spectrum. Even from my analytics, it's a spectrum. But it's between, majorly, the spike is between 25 and 45 in age, right? Yeah. But across race and location. So what would be your final words for people who are going to get to listen to this?
Whether you are a high school student, college student, graduate, professional, young professional, or you're at the peak of your career and you want to know what the next step is, there's a poster behind me. Maybe you're listening to this and not seeing it. It's an artwork by Banksy, the artist from Great Britain. And it says, what basically my last words are, is dream big dreams. Dream big dreams. It all starts with that. Everything else follows. If you don't start with that, you're going to settle for, mediocrity. And you are too valuable, too unique, too special to settle for that. You're not a statistic.
You count. You are not a statistic. You count. So therefore, dream big dreams. You've heard it from the Christian Ray Flores. Such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing so gracefully. I really do appreciate your presence here, and wishing you all the best in all of your beautiful expressions. Thank you for giving off of your best to the world. And we appreciate and celebrate your existence.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. All right, guys, this is where we draw the curtain. I hope that you've had a great time listening to this episode, because I did have a great time. Like, I'm smiling. If you could see my face right now, you see me smiling from ear to ear, because I've had a lot, of insight from this conversation with Christian today. And I hope you have too. If you didn't catch it, then you should listen again. And if you did catch them, then please maybe write in the comment section wherever you're listening to this from. Send me a feedback through email or hunt me down through socials and just, you know, get me your feedback to say, oh my gosh, this was a light bulb moment for me from this conversation. And maybe when you share, somebody else will go back and say, oh, really? Maybe I missed that one. And that's the point of sharing our notes sometimes when we do engage with great content. So thank you so much for listening today. Until I come your way again next week with yet another story, to remind you that challenges are not exclusive to any of us. We all go through them in one form or the other. But when we look at the challenges and we distill the life lessons that they are there to teach us, it makes us more valuable and then we're able to add value to our world, you know, at large. So keep holding on. That challenge is there to shift you and to make you more valuable, not to break you. So keep stretching, but do not snap. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.